It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's start with the good news. Nice breeze today. Highs of 84. Humidity's down. Highs of 86. And the humidity's going to stay low and through the week. And it's going to be dry. No rain till next Monday when another front comes through. But the highs are going to be pushing 90. So not really fall-like. Lower humidity, but not very fall-like. Saints did fall last night to the Kansas City Chiefs. Mike Dettelier joins us now. WWL NFL analyst, co-host of Sports Talk. He'll be second-guessing this evening at the Silver Slipper in on a beach in Hancock County, Mississippi. So he's got a long day. And, Mike, we appreciate your time as always. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you, Tommy.
You know, I'll start with this. When you got a guy playing center that wasn't even on a team how many days ago? And you're playing...
He got signed midweek.
Signed midweek, and you're playing the world champions that are undefeated, the two-time defending world champions that are undefeated. Chances are, you're up against it.
Yeah, you know, he's a veteran guy. He knows what to do. The problem became Nick Saldiveri. He got beat like a drum last night. Again, you put a lot of capital in Nick because... You traded up to get him in round four. You basically kind of handed him the starting job at guard, and then he gets hurt early in training camp and didn't see him again until almost the start of the season. And you could tell he was overwhelmed last night trying to block that front of the Chiefs. But
the only thing I was wondering about on that, Mike, is doesn't the center make the calls, or do they shift the responsibility?
He makes all the – in essence, the center – tells the guards what to do. Guards tell the tackles. They pass it down.
So I was just trying
to
figure.
And he makes all the adjustments.
I was trying to figure out if he was there long enough, the center, the new guy was there long enough to make the right. I was trying to watch him, and it seemed as though he was playing pretty well at first. Then when he went over to the right side to help Saldiveri, that's where the problems happened.
You got beaten every phase of the game last night. Mm-hmm. Offense, defense, special teams, and it was a master class coaching clinic by the Chiefs and Andy Reid. I mean, every move, and I've seen it before, you know, he's playing football chess and others are playing checkers. I mean, he's that good. That's why, you know, they've won as much as they've won throughout the years. And everybody's got injuries, and so you got to fight that off. Chiefs have them, Saints have them, but Bandy, he finds a way to win, finds a way to put that W up on the board, and that's what it's all about.
And
terrific
look,
coaching staff.
I'm not making excuses or anything, but I will say this. I thought they played hard. Not necessarily well, but I didn't see a lot of quit. I saw a lot of hard hitting is what I'm saying.
Yeah, sure. I mean, come on. This is Monday Night Football.
I know.
You got all your peers watching you.
I thought about that, too.
You got all your peers watching you, so you want to play hard. But when the Chiefs needed something, they had it. Mm. And, you know, we talked about this yesterday. There's nothing to simulate what Pat Mahomes can do.
Nope.
There's only one like him, that his improvisational skills – to make a play, to make a throw, to make a run. You got people around him. He eludes them. He somehow gets away, gets a first down, or he'll run around the pocket and make a throw downfield. There's only one guy that can do it like that. And it's him. And Kelce was exactly what we talked about yesterday. On a 3rd and 5, he gets you 7. Mm-hmm. You know, the numbers were not gaudy. He made a lot of catches, not a ton of yardage, but every time, seemingly, they were moving the chains. The biggest surprise to me was the Chiefs' ability to run the football with Kareem Hunt. Mm-hmm. Now, Kareem Hunt, just a couple of weeks back, he was unemployed. He was hoping he'd get another chance, and the Chiefs made that call, came in here. I thought last night he really had a big-time game against the Saints at running back.
And over 100 yards.
The Chiefs aren't noted for being a heavy running team. Mm-hmm. I thought last night they showed they were going to run it, and at times they had 4 tight ends in the game.
Yep.
So they sort of said, okay, you do what you got to do. We're going to do what we got to do. And they played a bit of bully ball up front against you.
Goes back to the coaching. The Saints constantly on offense were behind the chains, constantly picking up 1 yard on first down.
Yeah, you couldn't run the ball.
Nope.
You could see the game plan of Steve Spagnuolo here. His deal was, we're not going to let Alvin Kamara, you know, dictate this game. And so he sort of took him out. And I think for every defensive coordinator, you go into the game saying, one guy we have to be able to control. And last night it was Kamara, because they understood what he means to this team now, you know, as a runner and a receiver. And they sort of took that element out. But when you throw the football as much as the Saints did last night and you couldn't run it, you're in trouble against a team like the Chiefs.
I listened to Deuce and Mike and Jeff last night, but I did see, I watched the television naturally, and they had a shot of Steve Spagnuolo in his 4 Super Bowls that he was part of with the Giants, and I think 3 with the Chiefs, the way it worked out, if I remember correctly.
3 with the Chiefs, 1 with the Giants.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, yeah, but he also, you should put a 5th graphic up there that he has the record for having the worst defense ever in the history of the NFL, right, when he was here?
It was unbelievable numbers-wise. Goes to show you some of that was talent that was here. I don't think he ever really connected well with the players, because some of the players that played for him here, they'll tell you that was a bit of a disconnect.
That's a big disconnect to go from the worst ever in the NFL to 4 Super Bowls, don't you think?
Three, because he had 1 before.
All right.
With the Giants. And then, but man, he's hit goal there. He's got a great defensive staff around him. But man, it's him. He's got a real fertile mind for seeing or envision what's going to happen before and making those adjustments. And Tommy, you got to give him credit too. They have probably drafted as well on defense as any team in the NFL over the last 3 years. Most of those guys, with the exception of Chris Jones, are all with playing in like the 2nd or 3rd year of their contracts. So, man, they've been able to hit, like Nick Bolton. I remember scouting him at Missouri. He was an undersized linebacker. He was all over the field last night. All over. And McBride at the corner position, they had him kind of head up a lot against Olave. Kind of took that away. Kind of took Olave. He was not a big factor in this football game. So they've done a really good job of drafting and developing their players. They believe in what Spags is teaching them. I'm not sure that happened here at all. Based off the numbers, you could tell that wasn't a lot of confidence in what he was trying to get across.
Nope. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here when we come back. I got some reflective thoughts and some philosophic thoughts we'll share when I come back. Mike, and maybe you can tell me what you think. Mike D'Antilia, our guest. And it kind of goes to Steve Spagnuolo and Drew Brees and Sean Payton and the right time and the right place and reasonable expectations. Mike D'Antilia, WWL NFL analyst, co-host Sports Talk 622, Traffic Now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Mike D'Antilia, talking about the Saints-Chiefs game last night. The Chiefs had the ball for almost whole quarter more than the Saints. Chiefs had it 40 minutes, Saints 20 minutes, round numbers. Mike, you know, I was thinking about Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and I was thinking about Joe Montana and what we went through with the Saints in the NFC West, and I was thinking about Peyton Manning, and I was thinking about these generational quarterbacks and Drew Brees and Sean Payton. And Spagnuolo got me to thinking about this and how every now and then it aligns in the NFL, right? The stars align. And the stars were aligned here. But then you had the Bounty Gate thing. You had Sean Payton suspended for a year, which derailed a lot of it. You had the no call. And all of that produced one Super Bowl trophy for the Saints, which is good because Buffalo still doesn't have one. Atlanta ain't got one, right? So Buffalo's correct. Been there four times trying to get back. Minnesota doesn't have a Super Bowl title. I understand that. So I'm very appreciative of that. The only point I'm trying to make is I think at that point the stars were aligned. I think Bounty Gate disrupted a lot of that, as did the no call and some other things, unfortunately, that happened. And I think it's kind of – I don't want to pee on anybody's parade here or anything, but I think it's kind of not realistic to think that the stars are aligned now for this franchise. Accurate?
I agree. Events, okay? Events happened. And you see it in the business world, mm-hmm. okay, where a company is very good and you say, man, they could be a little bit better. But events happened, decisions happened that prevented you from doing that, for being that great company. So it's the same thing in sports. It's all about talent, and it's all about management and how that particular deal is run. And it's the moment in time where the Chiefs, they have the premier coach mm-hmm. right now in pro football, in Andy Reid. You look at it, other than a slight adjustment on the offensive side with Eric Bieniemy, most of those guys have been with Andy now for quite some time. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're changing a lot of coaches. Same head coach, same assistant coaches. The most important cog, though, you got the best player in the game.
Yep.
In Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
He's the best player in the game.
Yep.
Other people try to put other guys in that spot. They don't have his resume and what he's done as a player. And he makes everybody else better around him. And you can tell he makes everybody else better. And they have not one of the best. They have certainly in the top three or four defensive players on that side of the football, and Chris Jones.
So, man,
you got everything kind of moving at this point.
I was thinking about the way Lamar Jackson played on Sunday and watching Mahomes last night. If I had Lamar Jackson, as crazy as it seems, on the scout team to get ready for Mahomes, I don't think even Lamar Jackson could get you ready for that. You?
He makes plays that, Tommy, you can do everything you can.
I understand.
And he still makes them.
You talk about who?
It's unbelievable.
Mahomes. Yeah, I heard, what's his name, Kevin Harlan say that Lamar Jackson was as slippery as a raindrop the other day, which is true, but he's, even as good as he is, he's no Patrick Mahomes. Back with more after this, WWL First News. 6:46, 14 till 7. Look, there are haters out there. For the haters that are texting and saying, did you think the Saints were going to beat the Chiefs? Yeah, okay, so they lost to the defending Super Bowl, two-time Super Bowl champion Chiefs. I get that. If you predicted that, congratulations. You're Nostradamus. Go ahead and keep on with your hating, and let me know how you do at the casino. Speaking of which, Bobby Hebert, Mike DeToye could be there to second guess live on location, Silver Slipper Casino in beautiful Bay St. Louis, Mississippi. They're going to size up the Saints Chief with Mark Schlereth, NFL insider. Then at 6:30, special edition of the Saints Coaches Show with Mike Haas, Bobby Hebert on WWL, the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. Short week for the Saints, so no coach. Mike, look, you know, somebody texted in about injuries, and I know, let me preface it by saying this. You can get a steak at...
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Golden Corral, okay, and I'll put that in quotation marks, or you can get a steak at, I don't know, Crescent City Steakhouse, right? Or Ruth's Chris, or pick your steak place. All teams deal with injuries, but that doesn't mean that all the teams are dealing with the same injuries. The Saints team is really beaten up on the offensive line. And
yeah,
now quarterback.
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
And defensively as well.
Injuries.
And
yeah.
No, but I mean, really, the Saints have really been hard hit. Accurate?
Yeah, and every team goes through this little phase where you got a ton of injuries, mm-hmm. but you got to be able to fight through it. This is what you do in the offseason. You prepare for these events that when you're going to have injuries, you're always going to have a step down. But you don't want it to be a Mount Everest step down.
No, but you would have to admit the teams that really go on a roll and wind up doing well in the playoffs, you got to get lucky with injuries. Accurate?
You got to get lucky with injuries late in the year.
Okay.
That to me, I think, is the biggest key when you're getting late in the season into the playoffs, that you have good health sort of later in the year. Because I think every team sort of goes through it. Everybody goes through this deal where you got a bunch of injuries, and sometimes it's to multiple positions. But you absolutely right about the teams that normally make these long runs or get to the Super Bowl. They have a lot of good luck health wise. You think about when the Saints got to the Super Bowl. How many key players were out mm-hmm. late in the year and into the playoffs?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
None.
Yep.
They went in there, and you had a little bit of good luck there. But, again, sometimes it doesn't quite work out that way. But you could see with the Chiefs, I think that they've had injuries almost in specific spots. Like running back, wide receiver, their offensive line has been. Now they've got one tackle position. They better fix that up, but quick, because you could tell they had some issues with. But for the most part, you know, the good teams stay injury free, especially late in the year.
I'm looking at the Saints last night. You lose two starting linebackers. The center's out. We know that. Taysom Hill is out, who is the guy that Kubiak kind of designed the offensive around in a lot of ways, right?
I think he's a huge part of it, yes.
Okay, so that's all I'm saying is, and people are texting and quit crying about injuries. I'm just saying I'm keeping it real with you got to look at who's injured and what effect it has. Speaking of injuries, Derek Carr goes off the field. I don't know how problematic and his oblique is. Obliques can be problematic. You know that, especially for quarterbacks. People are saying about, you know, Spencer Rattler this, Spencer Rattler that. I believe, I would have to believe that, you know, both of these guys are mid-round picks. I don't think there's a lot of capital in either one, so I don't know why. I got to defer to the Saints coaching staff. They know what they see in practice, right?
Yeah, and it, you know, if it's not Derek Carr, I think the Saints are going to go with Jake Haener. Now, eventually, they may have to turn this over to Spencer, but I think if you saw the move last night, they went straight to Jake Haener mm-hmm. as the guy. And you got a short week now. Now you're playing an NFC South opponent in Tampa Bay. So I heard him in the press conference last night talked about it was the throw that he hurt the oblique injury.
Mm.
basically. It wasn't the hit. It was the throw.
Yeah, because it wasn't that
the one thing with
hard of a hit.
One thing with Carr, yes, it missed a lot of time. And so I think they would want him on the field instead of going to Hayner or Rattler at this stage.
So
coaching-wise.
Yeah, and I got to believe that, again, there's no favoritism there. They looked at both guys, and they know who has the better grasp of this or better grasp of that and who gives them the better chance to win, right?
That's all you want. You want a chance to win. You know, that you given the best opportunity to win. So when I saw last year when he played that Tampa Bay game early and he was maybe 60% healthy in that game, I'm still to this day, I don't know why they played him in that game. And you could tell, my thing is, they're going to go with Derek Carr unless he says, I can't do it. Now, last night, he made the comment, I couldn't do the smallest things. Once he got hit, or whatever the throw was. So, Tommy, you looking at a situation here now, you're the more important game because it's an NFC South opponent with your quarterback banged up.
Mm-hmm. Derek Carr last night, one thing that just drives me out of my mind is, you know, I always talk about the football being the hopes and dreams and aspirations of everybody, right? The fans, the team, the ownership, the other player, everybody. And you got to protect that. And when I see something like Derek Carr did last night, just throwing it up on what, the first, second play of the game, I just wonder how that can happen. How can that happen with a veteran quarterback?
Tommy, I thought that was one of the more important things in the game. Okay, you had a little bit of rhythm early on.
Yeah.
And then he throws this one up. Now, he said he was trying to throw it away. It didn't look that way to me. I mean, it looked to me like he was trying to hit a big chunk play there.
And look, Drew Brees did the same thing on occasion. Who else? I've seen all kind of quarterbacks do it. Peyton Manning's done it. It's like, what the hell are you thinking?
But on that spot, you just throw it away.
Yep.
I mean, you don't give them that opportunity. I'm not sure. They said, okay, he got touched on that play. The guy touched him. He hadn't even fallen yet. You know, he hadn't even come down. And that's when he took off running for the goal line, but they ruled that he was down. Okay, that particular – but on that play, you just got to throw it away and live to fight another day. You can't try to hit the big play. I'm convinced he was trying to hit the receiver downfield, that he threw that one up knowing that he had a receiver there and it was a 50-50 ball. But, you know, on that 50-50, the other team has that other 50% too to come down with it. I thought early on when you were trying to gain some momentum, you kind of shut that off yourself.
Yeah, and the whole night was like that. You go on a little bit of a drive. Alvin Kamara, who rarely makes a mistake, thinks he's down, and he stops, and he's not. After that, you got Olave with a stupid motion penalty that kind of kills that drive, right? You score a touchdown, and you miss the extra point, which kind of takes the wind out of everything. It was just not a good night. Tampa Bay's coming into town, or it might be already be here, to get away from Milton. How does that affect this week's game? Advantage, anybody?
All I knew is for Ida, the Saints left. They went to Texas, and then they played the game out in Jacksonville. Man, they beat the stew out of Green Bay.
Yeah.
You know? So the part about distraction sometimes, maybe that's kind of overplayed because you understand what your profession is. You understand what you have to do out on the field. But, Tommy, losing got a lot of fathers to it.
Yep. Thank you, Mike. Listen this afternoon to you from the Silver Slipper. 6:55, 5 till 7, traffic now, WWO. 9:09 as we make our way through this Tuesday morning. We had an interesting hour for you. We're going to start off talking about Generation Z job seekers. They should be willing to do anything, according to a CMO of Squarespace. And then we'll talk with Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, not only about managing anger, but about hypnosis. And that's always fascinated me. But first, we welcome Vicki Salemi, a career expert for Monster. How you doing, Vicki?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you? It's been a minute since we talked.
Hope it has. Well. How you been? Everything's good?
Yes, everything's good. I just can't believe we're already like almost mid-October. This year is flying.
Where are you now? What area? What city?
I'd rather not disclose it.
No,
but,
that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah,
that's
doing
no problem.
Well.
Is the weather nice or not? That's all I'm trying to get to.
Yes, it's nice. This is the best. I think that the fall is the best time of year. How about you in New Orleans?
It's going up to about 90 degrees, so, you know, it's not quite fall-like, but it's getting there a little bit. Let's talk about this Generation Z. First of all, let's talk about what is Squarespace and the CMO talking about what Generation Zers have to do? What's her story?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I read about that she mentioned that she did whatever it took to get a job when she was first starting out with an internship. And like many people do when they're first starting out, they cold call, they try to pound the pavement, you know, look for a job, internship, anything they can get to get their foot in the door. And I want to point out, you know, Gen Z, just for everyone listening, it's for the generation that was born between 1997 and around 2010, 2011, 2012. So basically anyone who's 27 and younger right now in the workforce is
but
Gen
Z. Let me just jump in for a second there if I can, Vicky, because I looked it up. And millennials were born between 81 and 96, and that's quite a spread, as is 97 to 2015, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Yes, it is. But what's interesting with Gen Z, just getting back to the whole hustle culture, there's definitely a disconnect in between the generations and how Gen Z views themselves versus the other generations, as well as what hustle work culture is. And we can take a springboard to that wherever you want to take the conversation.
Well, let's talk about why they view themselves differently. And then you said puzzle what?
No, there was a disconnect between how they view themselves and the other generations view Gen Z.
Where did that come from? How did that develop? Do we know?
Oh, well, you know, it's interesting. At Monster, we know that 71% of Gen Z workers think they exhibit problem solving, whereas only 13% of non-Gen Z workers agree, baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. So I think part of it may have been exasperated by the pandemic, because Gen Z workers, for the most part, they only really know their work experience has been hybrid or remote or working directly at the workplace, whereas other generations, millennials, Gen Z, Gen X, and baby boomers, like, we only pretty much had one choice. It was the workplace or no job.
Because when I look at it and the different ages here with these different groups, and baby boomers, just to refresh the audience, 46 and 64, between 1946 and 1964, that's a spread. Generation X between 65 and 80, millennials between 81 and 1996, Generation Z between 97 and 2015, and the alpha generation is emerging. Those are people born after 2015. But a Generation Z, I don't know how they could even begin to understand how a baby boomer, the work ethic, how things were, because it's a completely different experience, right?
It is a different experience. And to their credit, Gen Z really values work-life balance and not reaching burnout and prioritizing their mental health. But there is a point where you do need to roll up your sleeves and say, I'm going to work these 8 hours during the day. I'm not going to work 4 or 5 hours. You know, so I'm not implying that the Gen Z generation is not hard workers, but there's a different perception, I think, of work ethic. 64%. So the majority of Gen Z workers, according to our Monster data, think they have a strong work ethic. Only 10% of non-Gen Z workers agree.
Say that part one more time.
Only 10% of non-Gen Z workers think that Gen Z has a strong work ethic, where the majority of Gen Z workers think they do have a strong work ethic. So the perception is very different among Gen Z and the other generations compared to Gen Z.
Is there any way, any metric to use to objectively measure that?
Well, we had workers self-identify in terms of where they are in their own generation and how they view others. But what I think is important is that we're all working here together in a multi-generational workforce, and Gen Z brings a lot of valuable skills. They are really strong in social media. They are digital natives. They are savvy when it comes to that. Whereas the other generations, let's say baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, they have strong relationship building skills. They know what it takes to nurture and build those relationships. So I think the strengths, both weaknesses, but mostly focused on the strengths of each generation, can create a powerful, viable workforce.
So it seems like maybe the workplace has not yet caught up to Gen Zers, or not?
Well, some workplaces are adjusting, saying, you know, if we don't have these flexible work hours that all workers want, but that Gen Z, they're concerned about burnout, you know, which is valid point, that they may not have the valid, they may not have the workforce, and that there's a labor shortage anyway. So there is some flexibility among employers to say, wait a minute, maybe they do have a point. Maybe we should have more hybrid and remote work available, so to make Gen Z want to work here, because there are more options for them than there are Gen Z workers than in the past in terms of where they want to work.
So how are Generation Zers getting by? How are they finding their way?
Yeah, I think it's finding the employer that has what they're looking for in terms of that work-life balance, where they can build their career there and also just have the ability to nurture and grow their career, but being portable in terms of working remotely, having a hybrid schedule, or being able to tell the employer this schedule works best for them. And there are some employers that are like that. And so that's where I think the Gen Z finds the sweet spot with what they're looking for.
Generally speaking, are Generation Zers working one job or working a couple of different jobs?
I think many generations are working a couple of different jobs. And, you know, with the seasonal hiring underway for the upcoming holidays, a lot of workers overall are finding they need to just support to boost their pay.
You know, somebody texted in, this is an excellent question. Is that an American thing with Generation Z, or is that all over the world?
That's a really good question. I don't have data to speak to that, but I want to investigate further. That's a great question. But I think overall, when we look at overall around the world compared to America, our culture, work culture here is very different, whereas a lot of times the hustle culture you won't necessarily find overseas. All of a sudden it's lunchtime and everyone takes at least an hour for an actual lunch away from their desk, which is great behavior that we should try to instill more here in America. But overall, I think you might find also Americans might have more jobs, more remote work than in other areas of the world. So I think it depends where. But the hustle culture is very much an American thing.
So I'm just wondering about, you know, the old pig in a python thing where everybody goes through different stages, like when you're 25, you think one thing. When you're 35, you think another, just like something passing through a python. And I'm wondering, as the Generation Zers age and they realize what it takes maybe to accomplish what the baby boomers did or the millennials do. Let's talk about baby boomers and millennials. I'm just wondering if there was a change in ethics or – you understand what I'm trying to ask you, Vicky, in my own clumsy way, where – if as people age, they realize what it takes and the effort that's involved to be successful at work, where maybe it's not so much when they were born, but how old they are at the time?
Yes, I see what you're saying. And I think, too, for millennials, Gen Xers, and baby boomers, we have the work history to say, okay, well, we did hustle in certain areas, and there's a time and a place for that at different points in your career. Even, let's say, you've worked 10, 20 years, and you got promoted, and you need to work some extra hours to learn what you didn't have time to do when you're in meetings all the time. So, yes, mm-hmm. I think it can affect generations. But what's interesting, we have new monster data that also show that millennials, more than the other generations, think that hustle culture leads to burnout and or health issues. So I think overall, everyone's just more aware that hustling, working around the clock, no matter what it takes, it may not necessarily be the best. But I think that could be an extreme model. I think there's nothing wrong with rolling up your sleeves to demonstrate a really hardworking ethic. For the key to success, you may need to occasionally put in long hours. I mean, if you're working 80 hours every week for a long period of time, that is a one-way road to burnout, and that could lead to health issues. That's not a good thing. But there are other times and places when you may need to step it up.
Has Monster ever looked at what the expectations of a Gen Zer are in terms of how much they feel as though they should have to work and what they should be compensated?
Well, it's interesting you say that in terms of the compensation, because no, we don't have data in terms of looking at the pay for specific, let's say, hours or specific type of job. Mm-hmm. But Gen Z thinks that they I think it's just a really interesting time. And we don't want to, you know, pit the generations against each other, but right. It is so different in terms of the outlook of work. And again, I think the pandemic really shaped that outlook in terms of having hybrid and most importantly, remote work available. Now, you know, 1/3 of Gen Z workers, actually 44% of Gen Z, non-Gen Z, and 48% of Gen Z workers identify a hybrid working model as the most ideal working structure. So I think it's important also for all workers to take a note about the type of work that you want to do. If it is available to have a remote or flexible work arrangement, what does that look like? What do the hours look like? What's the ideal work culture for you? Some people thrive in a fast-paced, moving hustle culture where they're working a lot of hours. Others will say, wait a minute, I want to work actually less hours. So I think it all depends.
So is the workplace, generally speaking, and Generation Zers, generally speaking, on a collision course, and at one point something's going to have to change?
You know, it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens. And as many companies now, not all but some, are switching back to a fully in-office work environment. And Gen Z may have to ask themselves, okay, where does that leave me? Should I get a new job and look for another employer? Or maybe the on-site is actually good because I could have a mentor and I could adjust to, you know, working in meetings in person rather than through a screen. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. I think they've brought definitely positive attributes to the workplace, not only for their skills, but for everyone to say, wait a minute, this work-life balance thing, they have something here. We've been ignoring it, or we haven't been able to figure it out, but they really have their finger on the pulse of it to try to move the needle. But the question is, you know, how much? Because they can't necessarily, I'm going to say dictate, but at the end of the day, it's up to the employer's decision where and when the employees work and how to maintain and recruit and retain their workforce. So yes, Gen Z's input in the conversation is important, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see how work continues to evolve and if they continue to want that remote workforce and how employers are going to respond to that.
I'd love to see how Gen Zers feel when they're 50.
Yes, that will be very interesting.
I probably won't be around for it, but who knows, maybe. Thank you, Vicky Salemi from Monster. We appreciate your time as always. It's 9:22. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We always spend a Tuesday every other week talking about mental health. We'll talk about managing anger or feelings of being mad. And I think we're talking about hypnosis as well, which has always fascinated me. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get 4 5G phones on us and 4 lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on a required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 now, a little taste of fall. The humidity's down a little bit. Highs are still going to be in the 80s, but no rain forecast all the way through next Wednesday, which is good. God bless our friends in Florida. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about that tomorrow. Also, looking back at Helene, Alex Hammerstone joins us now, our friend from Trusted Sec. How you doing, Alex?
Not bad. It's a beautiful day here in Cleveland.
I'll bet it is. What's the temperature?
It is right in the 60s, or low 60s.
Cleveland's a nice town. I tell you that all the time. I've been. People crack wise about Cleveland, and I don't know why. It's a nice city. Let's talk about internet safety here and passwords. And you know, I don't want to alarm people, and I don't want to give them anything else to worry about. But by the same token, knowledge is power, right? So you need to know what's going on and what's not. Tell me what happened with this smart guessing algorithm.
So what it is really, you know, researchers and information security professionals really haven't improved the methods they can use to kind of figure out passwords and kind of crack them. And what's important to note is, you know, people oftentimes think about cracking passwords and so on and so forth. But what they're talking about is that when your password is stored on some website somewhere or some server somewhere, it generally is encrypted, right? Mm-hmm. And so if your password is ABC123, it's usually not stored as ABC123. It goes through what we call a hash or an encryption algorithm, and then is stored as a kind of a string of, you know, encrypted letters and numbers and so on and so forth. And so being able to crack that string of letters and numbers is what then allows them to know what your password is. So I just want to be clear about that when we talk about password cracking, because it's not just, you know, guessing what your password is and entering a bunch of passwords into a website, because you'll get locked out, right? I mean, we've all done that. Mm-hmm. You know, we forget our Gmail password and try three times, and then it says wait an hour, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important to note that piece.
So I'm looking at this story from Forbes, and it says how predictable humans are, and this goes maybe to crafting passwords, and I think this has a lot to do with the success of so-called psychics. They took a sample of 200,000 people and asked them to choose a, quote, random number between 1 and 100, and most of them gravitated toward a small set of six numbers, 7, 37, 42, 69, 73, and 77. There's got to be some, I guess, in the human psyche that explains that?
For sure. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned kind of psychics, and I always think of, you know, how people really glom on to, if I make 100 predictions, you'll remember the one that's accurate, but not the 99 that aren't.
Or you think of somebody and they call, but you know, that you think you're psychic, but you don't realize you thought about 100 other people that didn't call, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, and humans are very predictable, right? I mean, the most common password is still the word password.
Really?
And then absolutely. And if you look at, you know, all the kind of top passwords when they do research, it's things like password or password one, or, you know, right now it's, you know, fall 2024. And then, you know, in a few months it'll be winter 2024. Mm-hmm. And even when people are randomly selecting passwords, I mean, think about it. If you think about your own password, I mean, if you're coming up with it randomly, you probably have selected two characters that are next to each other on the keyboard, right? Or people tend to pick letters that are in the middle of the keyboard. So some combinations, even when they seem random, if they're picked by a human, are going to be more common than others.
I always pick something that's going on in my life at the time. Good methodology or not?
It can be, you know, Uh-oh. So certainly length is extremely important, right? It's oftentimes much more difficult to crack, you know, 30 characters of just words than it is to crack, you know, seven random digits or characters. But I think what's really important for people to think about is, you know, a lot of us have hundreds of online accounts you've created over the years, but how many of those are truly important to you, right? So probably your banking, your email, you know, some work accounts. Make sure at least for those you're choosing, you know, very, you know, long, complex passwords.
So somebody texted in, and I think this is interesting. When you order a pizza, why do you need a password? Or when you do something else, why need a password for Home Depot if you're going to, or whatever, if you're going to order a box of screws or whatever?
So oftentimes that's because they want to save your information, right? So they want to save your credit card information or your address or what have you and create an account.
They wouldn't do that anyway, Alex?
Not necessarily. I mean, I order pizza all the time as a guest, right? So I don't log in. I just kind of enter my credit card number or use Apple Pay and my address and do it one time and the pizza shows up. But, you know, every company really wants you in their ecosystem, right? They want to be able to collect data on you and create accounts and so on and so forth.
I'm going to take a break, and I want to open the phone lines here, the Oakenhart Jeweler Talk and Text Line, Internet Security 101. We'll talk about passwords, anything on the Internet that you think you understand but you don't. For example, somebody texts in and wants to know about cookies. They don't know what to do with cookies. I don't think they're talking about the chocolate chip type. I think they mean, do you allow all cookies? Do you use necessary cookies only? Do you disallow all cookies? What do the companies do with the cookies? What do they pick up? And we'll just take it from there, because Alex is the man. He understands all of this, and a lot of us don't. Alex Hammerstone, the leader of Trusted Sec. We'll take a break. Come back right now. Traffic, WWL. Tommy Tucker, 825, back with Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec, talking about internet security. And you were talking about, we were talking about mentalists and how some human beings revert to the same group of numbers. A massive group of human beings pick seven of the same numbers over and over. I don't know why, but I was working with this guy, Kreskin, who was supposed to be a mind reader at a casino, and I was emceeing a show, and he came out, and his microphone was not on. And I thought, of all the people who would know that his mic wasn't on, wouldn't it be him?
So I think mentalists are actually amazing to me because, you know, in my experience, they're basically, you know, psychics who are honest about what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been to mentalist shows, and it's actually fascinating.
It is.
But, you know, just through probability, right? I mean, you can start to guess things about people based on their appearance and their age and things like that. And you just start, you know, kind of teasing things out. You make 10 statements and maybe, you know, one is accurate and they remember that one. Then you go on with that. But mentalists are really a great example of, you know, how, you know, psychics and how the human psychology works because they're open about the techniques they're using.
Because I left amazed that he read people's mind. And then after I thought about it the next day, the one thing I was certain of is that he didn't read anybody's mind at all, that he surfaced a lot of information. Somebody wants to know about how often should they dump temporary files stored in a computer?
So really, it's a personal preference. You know, when you think about things like cookies, a lot of things, you know, do make our life easier, right? So if you're browsing the web...
Tell
and,
people
you know,
what a cookie is, Alex, that don't know, because I think there are some
sure,
people that don't.
So there are a number of different types of cookies. So I'll speak a bit generally. But it's basically a piece of code that the website is going to store on your computer, right? That's going to kind of, you know, help manage what you're doing there. And so when you are clicking around a site and it shows, you know, the links you've already clicked one color and the ones you haven't clicked a different color, that's a cookie at work. Or, you know, it's what builds your shopping cart on most websites.
Mm-hmm.
So it does help in those ways, but there are other kinds of cookies that follow you around the internet. And so that's why, you know, if you search, you know, boots or something on one website, all of a sudden every other website on earth is giving you ads for boots, right? You can't get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's good and bad to it. There can be some privacy concerns, but just remember that if you delete all those, what'll happen is a lot of the saved logins or saved browsing history will go away, which in many ways can make your internet experience less efficient.
So generally speaking, do we want to allow all cookies or do we want to use the necessary cookies only?
So necessary usually will get the job done. And, you know, really you kind of have to go with experience, right? So if you're only allowing necessary and you don't like the experience you're getting, then you can allow all. But only allowing necessary is fine for most people.
Somebody texted in, they don't trust anything, and I'm of that ilk. And when somebody suggests a password and it's extremely complicated, it looks great, but they want to know if somebody's not storing that somewhere or if the person that's, or whatever it is that's generating that suggested password, all of a sudden you're compromised because you're using a password that they suggested. Is that dumb?
So it's always possible, right? I mean, we always want to think about what's possible versus what's probable or what's likely. And so generally, you know, I mean, if you're letting, you know, Apple or your iPhone or a website generate a password, you're pretty much going to be fine. There's always exceptions, right? I mean, I can stand in a room of people and say no one here is going to win the Powerball,
mm-hmm.
but eventually with enough rooms, I'll be wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to look at kind of what's most common and what the biggest risks are. We take risks all day, every day, right? I mean, whether it's walking down the street or getting behind the wheel of a car, there's so many things that are dangerous or possibly dangerous, but we get through most days okay.
Give me three tips before we let you go, 30 seconds left, rules of thumb for people when they're creating passwords that are the best practices.
So the biggest one is don't reuse passwords, right? So don't use the same password across multiple websites. That causes tons of issues. Another one is make sure you're using that multi-factor authentication, right? So make sure that even if someone knows your username and password, they still need that third piece, right? That code that gets sent to you. And then one piece is always, you know, you can use a password manager. There are a number of them out there. And then the final thing is, you know, don't be afraid to write down certain passwords as long as you keep that safe, right? So I'd much rather you have a very complex password, you know, written in the margins of your favorite book than use a weak password.
What about keeping it on a notepad on the phone?
So it depends, right? Because it depends if somebody has physical access to your phone, which is not uncommon. There are a lot of scams that kind of work like that. Somebody will ask to use your phone, and then they'll look in your notepad, or they'll even Venmo themselves money or something like that. So I'd much prefer people use a password manager than use the notepad.
Listen to what he said. Put it in a margin of a book. My gosh.
Well, think.
No, I understand what you're saying.
House, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I get it. Yeah. But then you got to remember what book. Thank you, Alex. Right. Pleasure as always.
Anytime.
Alex Hammerstone. He's always there when we need him. Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We'll talk to Meg Farris when we come back. A story that's going to both break your heart and warm it at the same time. Minute late. Time now. 8:46, 14 till 9. Meg Farris joins us now, our good friend. And Meg had a story the other night on WWL Louisiana that both I texted her, and it's true. It broke my heart and it touched my heart all at the same time. Before we get to that, Meg, you got a feel for these poor people in Florida, huh?
Tommy, I have to tell you, first of all, thank you for always watching our stories. I've been hearing from family members, from friends who just feel like this pit in their stomach. They feel sick, you know, just sad for what they know these people are going to go through, because we've all been through it with Katrina and the years. And I feel the same way. And I'm just wondering, do a lot of your listeners feel that same way? Just that pit in your stomach, sick for these people. And thankful it's not us, but it's not, I'm not happy that it's not us.
Right.
I'm sad for them.
That, you know what, Meg, I'm right there with you, and I'll open the text lines, 504-260-1870. Let me know what you're feeling about these poor people in Florida, because you know they're going to get hammered. And matter of fact, tomorrow, Brooke Lazer is going to come in, because she used to work in that area that was hit so hard by Helene. Because I'm having a hard time when it comes to Georgia and mountainous areas being hit so hard by a hurricane, putting that in my mind. So she's going to take us through that and also talk about Milton, because it's going to some of the same areas of Florida. I was watching CBS News last night, and apparently some of the areas that were just destroyed are going to get hit again.
Yes, and I was talking to Peyton Malone. It was hurting my brain. I couldn't look at the pictures of Helene, North Carolina. I didn't understand what happened.
That's what I'm
saying.
It's
so different. It's so different from what happens to us. So the rain, it had rained and rained. So the rivers were full. And then here comes Hurricane Helene. It rained and rained. The rivers got full, overflowed, and all that was flash flood, unlike really what we have. It was just rushing down the mountain and just taking homes off their foundation. So in a way, it's almost more disastrous than ours that creeps up, creeps up, creeps up, and then the water slowly goes in your home. And if you're home, at least you could run some things, you know, put them on blocks or run them upstairs if you have a two-story. But either way, it's just a mess. And but
if you
if you've ever been
to Asheville, you've been, haven't you? And Biltmore and all that.
I have not been up there, but
a lot of people,
you know, there are a lot of New Orleanians who have property up there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us have been to areas like that, and it's just hard to wrap your mind around. But we'll talk about it tomorrow. Let me take can we take a break early here, Tim, and then get to Meg's story? We come back about these people in Marrero and try to get them some help to see what we can do. I know you got a good effort going, but we're going to help you out as much as possible. 8:49, hopefully going to traffic a minute early here on WWL. All right, Tommy Tucker, 8:53. Meg, people are texting in. Yes, they do feel that pit in their stomach that we are all feeling about Florida getting ready to get hit by Milton. But the people that we're talking about now, and we have about 7 minutes left here to tell your story, somebody's still suffering with damage from Ida, right?
Many people still are, which just amazes me. So, Tommy, the people of this community, they're just so good. So we get a call to the newsroom, random viewer who says, I want to help my neighbor. And you never know before you go out on a scene, on a story in the field, what you're going to get. So here's what we do. We walk into this man's home. He's in his early 60s. He's severely physically disabled with cerebral palsy. What happened was when he was a little boy, like about 1 year old, he had the German and red measles, which made him unable to walk. So he lives in a home where he can barely do things for himself, and he's taking care of his very, very ill 91-year-old mother. And he calls us not for help for him, but help for his neighbor. So he starts crying. He says, you know, my neighbor helps me take out the garbage. He helps me unload the groceries because of how disabled he is. So now we go next door to the neighbor to see, well, what's his story that this man wants to help? We walk in, and a man who has escaped communist Cuba, who is in his 70s, and gets $800 disability and Social Security a month, can't afford insurance, can barely afford anything, is living in one room of his unair-conditioned house because Ida has shredded his roof and every room has huge holes. I don't mean little holes. I mean huge holes. And it's raining the day we go do the story. And the water is pouring in like by the bathtub load. Okay. So every room is just flooding with every rain. And I asked him, I said, why are you so happy and not help and constantly helping your neighbors when you're living this way? And he just says, it's just what he wants to do. He wants to help people. So now, of course, I have the tears. The neighbor who wants to help him has the tears. So we call the parish and we find out that the parish has, Jefferson Parish has a program to help people through the Homeowners Association, but it's a nonprofit. And the daughter comes over and says, the stepdaughter, we've applied and we're waiting. They applied way back in the spring. Meanwhile, holes for 3 years from Ida. And when we called, they said it's going through the process. You know how government, it needs the environmental certificate. It needs this. It needs that. So it's going through the process and taking time. Meanwhile, this man is living with holes in his roof. And so when we called and said, well, we're doing the story tonight, the parish came right out in the rain and put tarps over his roof, which was wonderful. But, you know, the daughter said, why, when I've been calling, why didn't we get tarps? Why did it take you to make the phone call to get tarps? And she's right. She's absolutely right. But, you know, the wheels of government, that type of thing, run slowly because there's so many permitting and approval processes. So there's the story. So here's this happy man, because he escaped Cuba many years ago, was a crane operator. And the process is playing out. But the bottom of the story is a neighbor who needs help himself, feels sorry for his neighbor and called for help for him. And it touches me. It really does.
Well, and a reason I wanted to have you on, they started a GoFundMe page for him, correct? And they're trying to get $15,000 to fix his house permanently without a tarp?
Yes. So, well, the government, he did qualify for this grant from the government, and it's going to be $22,000 to come fix his roof. I will tell you, though, and some all the damage from the inside, this mold, as you can imagine, sure, growing. But the way he's living, sure, $15,000 would help him, I guess, get his house, you know, back together. So, yes, it amazes me, Tommy, how we go about our lives, and then I'm invited in to the privacy of a stranger's home, and I see how other people are living, and you never know. They just go about their daily lives, not complaining, and this is how they're living. And there's so many people out there like that, but there's so many people out there who are giving in this community and want to help. So that's the good side.
And that's why I wanted to have you on, because not everybody can watch or listen all at the same time. And I know we have contractors that listen and so forth, and I hate to put you in the middle of this, but they can contact you, they can email you if they want, if they're a contractor, and they can maybe help out with this gentleman?
Sure. If they email me, I'll be happy to put them in touch with him. And my email is mfarris@wwltv.com. So mfarris@wwltv.com. And I'll be happy to forward them along.
And think what a story it would be if we can get this guy's house fixed up due to donated labor, materials, and contractors, et cetera. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Yeah, it would be. And Tommy, he told me that he went to prison in Cuba, no surprise, way back when Castro would put people in prison because he had snuck some food to his family underneath the spare tire in his car. I mean, you know, he's seen hell, okay? And I think that's probably why he's just so happy. He's so happy to live in America. So what? He has a house with holes in it. But I wouldn't be that happy.
And yet, people that have so much can't find happiness. Amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
Thank you, Meg.
Yes.
God bless you and your work, and maybe we can get this guy's house fixed. I hope so. That's my goal.
My pleasure.
Take it easy. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. We're going to spend an hour talking to Vicki Salemi, a career expert, about Generation Z job seekers should be willing to do anything, according to Squarespace CMO. How do younger generations feel about work-life balance? And we'll talk with Dr. Judy Ho about handling anger. Might have some of that after last night's Saints game. We'll be back, WWL.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
9:09 as we make our way through this Tuesday morning. We had an interesting hour for you. We're going to start off talking about Generation Z job seekers. They should be willing to do anything, according to a CMO of Squarespace. And then we'll talk with Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, not only about managing anger, but about hypnosis. And that's always fascinated me. But first, we welcome Vicki Salemi, a career expert for Monster. How you doing, Vicki?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you? It's been a minute since we talked.
It has. How you been? Everything's good?
Yes, everything's good. I just can't believe we're already like almost mid-October. This year is flying.
Where are you now? What area? What city?
I'd rather not disclose it.
No, that's
but,
okay. That's okay.
Yeah,
that's
doing
no problem.
Well.
Is the weather nice or not? That's all I'm trying to get to.
Yes, it's nice. This is the best. I think that the fall is the best time of year. How about you in New Orleans?
It's going up to about 90 degrees, so, you know, it's not quite fall-like, but it's getting there a little bit. Let's talk about Generation Z. First of all, let's talk about what is Squarespace and the CMO talking about what Generation Zers have to do? What's her story?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I read about that she mentioned that she did whatever it took to get a job when she was first starting out with an internship. And like many people do when they're first starting out, they cold call, they try to pound the pavement, you know, look for a job, internship, anything they can get to get their foot in the door. And I want to point out, you know, Gen Z, just for everyone listening, it's for the generation that was born between 1997 and around 2010, 2011, 2012. So basically anyone who's 27 and younger right now in the workforce is Gen Z.
Let me just jump in for a second there if I can, Vicki, because I looked it up, and millennials were born between 81 and 96, and that's quite a spread, as is 97 to 2015, isn't it?
It is. It really is. Yes, it is. But what's interesting with Gen Z, just getting back to the whole hustle culture, there's definitely a disconnect in between the generations and how Gen Z views themselves versus the other generations, as well as what hustle work culture is. And we can take a springboard to that wherever you want to take the conversation.
Well, let's talk about why they view themselves differently. And then you said puzzle what?
No, there was a disconnect between how they view themselves and the other generations view Gen Z.
Where did that come from? How did that develop? Do we know?
Oh, well, you know, it's interesting. At Monster, we know that 71% of Gen Z workers think they exhibit problem solving, whereas only 13% of non-Gen Z workers agree, baby boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials. So I think part of it may have been exacerbated by the pandemic, because Gen Z workers for the most part, they only really know their work experience is has been hybrid or remote or working directly at the workplace, whereas older other generations, millennials, Gen Z, Gen X, and baby boomers, like we only pretty much had one choice. It was the workplace or no job.
Because when I look at it and the different ages here with these different groups and baby boomers, just to refresh the audience, 46 and 64, between 1946 and 1964, that's a spread. Generation X between 65 and 80, millennials between 81 and 1996, Generation Z between 97 and 2015, and the alpha generation is emerging, those people born after 2015. But Generation Z, they, I don't know how they could even begin to understand how a baby boomer, the work ethic, how things were, because it's a completely different experience, right?
It is a different experience. And to their credit, Gen Z values, really values work-life balance and not reaching burnout and prioritizing their mental health. But there is a point where you do need to roll up your sleeves and say, I'm going to work these 8 hours during the day. I'm not going to work 4 or 5 hours. You know, so I'm not implying that the Gen Z generation is not hard workers, but there's a different perception, I think, of work ethic. 64%. So the majority of Gen Z workers, according to our Monster data, think they have a strong work ethic. Only 10% of non-Gen Z workers agree.
Say that part one more time.
Only 10% of non-Gen Z workers think that Gen Z has a strong work ethic, where the majority of Gen Z workers think they do have a strong work ethic. So the perception is very different among Gen Z and the other generations compared to Gen Z.
Is there any way, any metric to use to objectively measure that?
Well, we had workers self-identify in terms of where they are in their own generation and how they view others. But what I think is important is that we're all working here together in a multi-generational workforce, and Gen Z brings a lot of valuable skills. They are really strong in social media. They are digital natives. They are savvy when it comes to that. Whereas the other generations, let's say baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, they have strong relationship building skills. They know what it takes to nurture and build those relationships. So I think the strengths, both weaknesses, but mostly focused on the strengths of each generation, can create a powerful, viable workforce.
So it seems like maybe the workplace has not yet caught up to Gen Zers or not?
Well, some workplaces are adjusting, saying, you know, if we don't have these flexible work hours that all workers want, but that Gen Z, they're concerned about burnout, you know, which is valid point, but they may not have the workforce, and that there's a labor shortage anyway. So there is some flexibility among employers to say, wait a minute, maybe they do have a point. Maybe we should have more hybrid and remote work available to make Gen Z want to work here, because there are more options for them than there are Gen Z workers than in the past in terms of where they want to work.
So how are Generation Zers getting by? How are they finding their way?
Yeah, I think it's finding the employer that has what they're looking for in terms of that work-life balance, where they can build their career there and also just have the ability to nurture and grow their career, but being portable in terms of working remotely, having a hybrid schedule, or being able to say, tell the employer this schedule works best for them. And there are some employers that are like that. And so that's where I think the Gen Z finds the sweet spot with what they're looking for.
Generally speaking, are Generation Zers working one job or working a couple of different jobs?
I think many generations are working a couple of different jobs. And, you know, with the seasonal hiring underway for upcoming holidays, a lot of workers overall are finding they need to just support to boost their pay.
You know, somebody texted in, this is an excellent question. Is that an American thing with Generation Z, or is that all over the world?
That's a really good question. I don't have data to speak to that, but I want to investigate further. That's a great question. But I think overall, when we look at overall around the world compared to America, our culture, work culture here is very different, whereas a lot of times the hustle culture you won't necessarily find overseas. All of a sudden it's lunchtime and everyone takes at least an hour for an actual lunch away from their desk, which is great behavior that we should try to instill more here in America. But overall, I think you might find also Americans might have more jobs, more remote work than in other areas of the world. So I think it depends where, but the hustle culture is very much an American thing.
So I'm just wondering about, you know, the old pig in a python thing where everybody goes through different stages, like when you're 25, you think one thing. When you're 35, you think another, just like something passing through a python. And I'm wondering, as the Generation Zers age and they realize what it takes maybe to accomplish what the baby boomers did or the millennials do. Let's talk about baby boomers and millennials. I'm just wondering if there was a change in ethics or you understand what I'm trying to ask you, Vicky, in my own clumsy way, where if as people age, they realize what it takes and the effort that's involved to be successful at work, where maybe it's not so much when they were born, but how old they are at the time.
Yes, I see what you're saying. And I think, too, for millennials and Xers and baby boomers, we have the work history to say, okay, well, we did hustle in certain areas, and there's a time and a place for that at different points in your career. Even, let's say, you've worked 10, 20 years, and you got promoted, and you need to work some extra hours to learn what you didn't have time to do when you're in meetings all the time. So, yes, mm-hmm. I think it can affect generations. But what's interesting, we have new monster data that also show that millennials, more than the other generations, think that hustle culture leads to burnout and or health issues. So I think overall, everyone's just more aware that hustling, working around the clock, no matter what it takes, it may not necessarily be the best. But I think that could be an extreme model. I think there's nothing wrong with rolling up your sleeves to demonstrate a really hardworking ethic. For the key to success, you may need to occasionally put in long hours. I mean, if you're working 80 hours every week for a long period of time, that is a one-way road to burnout, and that could lead to health issues. That's not a good thing. But there are other times and places when you may need to step it up.
Has Monster ever looked at what the expectations of a Gen Zer are in terms of how much they feel as though they should have to work and what they should be compensated?
Well, it's interesting you say that in terms of the compensation, because no, we don't have data in terms of looking at the pay for specific, let's say, hours or a specific type of job. Mm-hmm. But Gen Z thinks that they, I think it's just a really interesting time. And we don't want to, you know, pit the generations against each other, but right. It is so different in terms of the outlook of work. And again, I think the pandemic really shaped that outlook in terms of having hybrid and most importantly, remote work available. Now, you know, one third of Gen Z workers, actually 44% of Gen Z, not Gen Z, and 48% of Gen Z workers identify a hybrid working model as the most ideal working structure. So I think it's important also for all workers to take a note about the type of work that you want to do. If it is available to have a remote or flexible work arrangement, what does that look like? What do the hours look like? What's the ideal work culture for you? Some people thrive in a fast-paced, moving hustle culture where they're working a lot of hours. Others will say, wait a minute, I want to work actually less hours. So I think it all depends.
So is the workplace, generally speaking, and Generation Zers, generally speaking, on a collision course, and at one point something's going to have to change?
You know, it's going to be very interesting to watch what happens. And as many companies now, not all but some, are switching back to a fully in-office work environment. And Gen Z may have to ask themselves, okay, where does that leave me? Should I get a new job and look for another employer? Or maybe the on-site is actually good because I could have a mentor and I could adjust to, you know, working in meetings in person rather than through a screen. So it's going to be very interesting to watch. I think they've brought definitely positive attributes to the workplace, not only for their skills, but for everyone to say, wait a minute, this work-life balance thing, they have something here. We've been ignoring it, or we haven't been able to figure it out, but they really have their finger on the pulse of it to try to move the needle. But the question is, you know, how much? Because they can't necessarily, I want to say dictate, but at the end of the day, it's up to the employer's decision where and when the employees work and how to maintain and recruit and retain their workforce. So yes, Gen Z's input in the conversation is important, but it's definitely going to be interesting to see how work continues to evolve and if they want continue to want that remote workforce and how employers are going to respond to that.
I'd love to see how Gen Zers feel when they're 50.
Yes, that will be very interesting.
I probably won't be around for it, but who knows, maybe. Thank you, Vicky Salemi from Monster. We appreciate your time as always. It's 9:22. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll talk to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We always spend a Tuesday every other week talking about mental health. We'll talk about managing anger or feelings of being mad. I think we'll talk about hypnosis as well, which has always fascinated me. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:29, you might be angry after last night's Saints game. The people in New York were not happy with the Jets' start. Neither was the owner. Apparently they were angry because they've just fired the coach. Robert Saleh is gone. Thank you, Aaron Rodgers, after a 2-3 start. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical licensed neuropsychologist, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, joins us. She wasn't happy when our 49ers lost. Were you, Dr. Judy?
Oh my God. Can't even talk about it. They just threw it away again.
Yep.
It was so devastating.
I can't deal
with it.
You got to deal with it.
Well, I feel your pain.
You better deal with it. You're a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist.
I guess. This is where I can't take my own advice.
Yeah, you better do it. Let's talk about, and I'm a little bit confused here. Are we going to talk about hypnosis as well or not?
Yeah, we can. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes, because that has always fascinated me. And we'll talk about that. Then we'll talk about that as it relates to anger. Can anybody be hypnotized?
You know, not everybody. So what we know about hypnosis is that there are some people who are more suggestible to hypnosis than others. And there's been studies about why people are suggestible. It includes being more open-minded, being more curious. Those individuals are most often the more susceptible ones because they're willing to essentially suspend belief and see if something new is going to work for them. But if people are basically going into it highly defensive, basically wanting to, you know, expose it as basically a fraud, then you're not going to be quite as hypnotizable. And there's different forms of hypnosis, right? Stage hypnosis is something that's very different than the hypnotherapy that we talk about that works for certain things, like stopping a bad habit, like wanting to quit smoking. That's very, very different from the stage hypnosis that we see in TV shows and in programs.
You know, it'd be funny in a TV show if they were ever hypnotizing somebody and somebody else was a ways away and watching it and they accidentally got hypnotized. That'd be funny, wouldn't it? That's never happened before in a sitcom.
I know. They claim that they edit out the parts that would hypnotize you. I mean, I don't really know. I'm not really sure
about
that.
I'm just saying, the old sitcom device where the wrong person gets hypnotized and they've done it.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
That would be funny.
So is it similar to falling asleep? And I wanted to also ask you, and you didn't come on to talk about this, but I thought maybe it might be within your wheelhouse as a neuropsychologist. What happens in your brain when you fall asleep? Because I've been having one heck of a time falling asleep. It's kind of like a magical, ethereal thing where you just kind of drift off. But if you're thinking about drifting off, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. The more that you're trying to focus on, I need to go to sleep right now, or I need to get tired, your brain does the opposite, essentially. The way that your brain falls asleep is that it has to be in some kind of rest and relaxation state. Mm-hmm. And that usually means that the things that you're thinking about, the images that maybe you're conjuring up, like, you know, dreaming of your next vacation or whatnot, it kind of has to be a little bit more obscured and a little bit more generalized as opposed to something very specific. Because when you're thinking about something specific, that takes brain power, that takes focus. And when you're focused, you can't fall asleep. That's why, you know, that old trick of counting sheep does work for some people, because it's such a rote and mundane task that your brain essentially does start to get into a rest and relaxation state because it does like patterns. So it's like, okay, let's just count. That's kind of brainless for most people. It's kind of automatic. And then you're not really focused on anything specific.
And what happens in your brain itself, presuming you have one? I know you do. I'm talking about me here. But what happens? do neurons shut down or something? Or do they turn off? Or do we know?
Yeah. So we go into different waves in terms of our brain waves. when we're going to sleep. So essentially, like, for example, alpha waves, you know, theta waves. Theta waves tend to be the most meditative sleep. And essentially, you go into these different stages. And that's why there's this ideal time for naps. You know, we usually say 20 minutes to an hour is essentially the key, because then you go into a different state. And when you wake up, you feel really groggy and you feel really confused. But there's two key processes that control sleep. One is circadian rhythm. This probably a lot of people know about. It's your internal biological clock. It's regulated by a part of your brain called the hypothalamus, and it's automatic. It responds to light and dark and signals the body when to be awake and when to sleep. Most people's circadian rhythm is just under 24 hours. Some of them are a little bit over. Most people are not right on the dot. And that's why all of us have different sleep needs as well. Some people feel pretty rested after 6 to 7 hours. Some people, they say they need their 9, you know, and that is related to your own internal biological clock. It's also somewhat related to your, just to your genetics. And then there's the sleep-wake homeostasis, which is really important. This is what happens in the brain when you've stayed up for a long time. So essentially, the longer you stay awake, the more pressure builds up to sleep. And as you get closer and closer to that high pressure point, your brain's just going to start shutting down. Like, you're going to not be able to remember what you're doing. You're going to make decisions impulsively. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but people have tried to just hold a very light object in their hand after being sleep deprived for about 30 hours. It could just be like, for example, a raw egg. And they're just like, oh, I can do this. I can hold this for 1 minute. Yeah. And they can't. Your brain literally just starts to shut down things that are not essential. And holding an egg up with your hand in your brain, it's like, hey, we need sleep. We don't need to do this right now. This is not survival. And really? So you'll just start dropping it.
The brain,
so there's been like lots of fun experiments related to that type of thing.
I'm going to keep Tim up. I'm going to feed him some coffee and keep him up for 30 hours and have some fun. There's an ancient Chinese proverb I see here that says, if you are patient in one moment of anger, you will save yourself 100 days of sorrow. I can never remember a time where I've gotten angry, where I've been happy that I've gotten angry. I think a lot of people feel that way. We'll talk about handling anger when we come back. 9:35, Dr. Judy Ho is our guest. You got any questions? 504-260-1870, traffic now, WWL. 9:41, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, talking about dealing with anger and handling anger. Since we're talking about the brain, Dr. Judy, what happens in our brain to make us angry?
Yes, I do have you muted.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
Yep. Yeah, so talking about all the ways that our brain sometimes serves us and maybe sometimes gets in our way, the anger switch is mostly related to a part of the brain that is responsible for emotional expression and experience, which is the amygdala. And that communicates with your frontal lobe, which is the part of us that makes us human beings. Our frontal lobes are very active, and it's what causes us to be able to plan ahead and to have impulse control some of the time. So when there is a feedback that tells our brain that there is a danger of some sort, the anger rises and it causes us to act in a way that protects ourselves, right? So sometimes that's a flight response, sometimes that's a fight response, and sometimes for some people, there's also a freeze response. But other times, maybe we're overreacting to a situation, there's not any real danger, but perhaps because of our past or just because we've had a really stressful day, we get provoked, and then we start acting in a way that probably isn't necessary and ends up causing us grief or problems in our relationships.
So it's a highly charged political environment in this country. Trump supporter arguing with a Harris supporter, neither one's listening to the other. Both are getting increasingly angry. What is triggering that anger?
Well, you know, when we talk about political and ideological differences, it feels extremely personal to every single person. It feels like it's part of their identity makeup. And it also feels like it's part of not only their identity makeup, but also something that is so valuable to them, right? They may see themselves, everybody, no matter what, you know, what part of the spectrum they are on in terms of their political standing and beliefs. I'm so sorry, Luca. See, Luca's arguing right now. But essentially, most people, they really affix part of their highest values to their political beliefs. Like, they believe that they are supporting a certain party or a certain candidate because they value honesty or they value community. Like, whatever the case is, they have linked it to their very top values. And I think when you talk about intergenerational differences with politics, like, you know, extended family members, oftentimes parents and grandparents, they may take personal offense, like, oh my gosh, I've tried to instill these values that are important to me in my children, in my grandchildren, in my nephews and nieces, and they've gone completely the other way. What does that mean about me? And it feels like a slap in the face to them, right? So for all of these reasons, this is why people are not listening. It's like they're so deeply held beliefs for so many people, and they mean so much to them personally that it feels like a personal attack.
Why does it linger longer for some people than others? Why do some people get angry and then they're over it? Other people just simmer and stew forever.
Yeah, well, a couple of things, but one thing that really affects it is a degree of rumination that you have about something that feels unjust or not right to you. Right? So the more that you think about it, the more it's going to be something that will keep festering over time. But also, some people are more sensitive to this feeling of something being unfair or unjust than others. Some people will say, well, you know what, that's just them, or, you know, I have better things to worry about. And they move on, and they can tell themselves those things, and they really believe it. But other people will say, no, I have to make this right. Mm-hmm. And even though it's nothing major, I just want them to know that that was not okay, right? People who have a more sensitive gauge, I guess, for things not being fair, they're going to end up having more grudges in general.
Don Henley's got this song, The Heart of the Matter. I don't know if you've heard it or not. The great line in it says, you keep carrying that anger, it'll eat you up inside. And a lot of times, and I did learn this in my life, and I try not to get angry anymore. Tim, how am I doing this week so far? Pretty good? Tim's giving me a thumbs up, yeah. No, but I'm trying not to get I try not to get angry anymore because it's useless. It's a useless emotion. It doesn't really serve any purpose. If you do have a problem, you have to deal with it and you have to fix it, and emotional intelligence keep the emotion out of it, right? But a lot of times people carry grudges and it eats them up, but the person they're angry at, they don't even think about the person that is being torn up.
Exactly. I mean, I agree with you in a lot of ways, Tommy. I mean, anger most of the time only hurts the person who is experiencing the anger. Mm-hmm. Obviously, anger is helpful in that it tells us something is not right. That's good to know that. It obviously says something about, you know, a situation that's happening that's not okay with you. But most people will just sit with that and say, I'm angry, and they don't think beyond what that really means. And there's so many different shades and nuances that this whole situation might be about, and maybe it's not anger. So one thing that I like to tell my clients to use is a feelings wheel. You can, you know, Google that. There's a lot of free versions out there. But, you know, essentially anger could be 15 other more specific emotions that actually are more productive if you understood them, because then you can cope with that directly. Secondly, as you already pointed out, anger has some really major physical and emotional effects on the person that is experiencing it. And meanwhile, the person you're mad at, they're just living their life. Maybe you had an argument with them about that incident or whatever you're angry about. You know, they were upset by that, but then they've moved on and you're the one who is suffering the consequences. And so find some way to be able to process that, even if you can't let go of it. Right? One thing I've been telling a lot of people lately is, you know, if you're upset at a friend, a family member, you don't have to just cut them off completely, because sometimes that's not feasible or practical, but you can just in your mind separate yourself from them to a degree. Like, they're not in your inner circle. Like, don't let them affect your whole day, right? Because they're just not, don't give them that much importance, right? That's one way that you can deal with somebody that you maybe have long-standing resentment towards.
There are a lot of free feelings wheels out there. I would suggest you get the one from Tucker.com. It's going to cost you $49.95, but it's a lot better. No, but seriously, I'm looking at it, and it sounds like some kind of, no offense, but, you know, sometimes people throw the word psychobabble around, but this feelings wheel actually is an analytical tool, it appears to me, where you start with, in the center, how you feel, and then from there you see what led to that. Am I interpreting this correctly?
So basically the center emotions, the 6 to 8, depending on the version that you're looking at, are more what we would believe to be like the universal emotions, right? It could be things like happiness or joy, anger, sadness, et cetera. But a lot of people just say, I'm sad, or they'll say, I'm frustrated. But it's like, okay, but what's behind that? What's the nuance? And so when you look out into the outer parts of the circle, essentially each of the main emotions will radiate out into 3 to 11 other emotions. And that can be really helpful because it can be very difficult when you just keep saying, I'm frustrated. But it's like, okay, but what does that mean? Like, what's the specifics of that, right? And if you can really isolate what it is, like, okay, well, I'm feeling lonely. All right, well, loneliness, there's productive things you can do when you feel lonely. But when you talk about frustration, it's kind of a much more general emotion. And sometimes people don't really know what to do with that, but they just keep stewing with that feeling because they know it's a negative emotion. And then they get caught up thinking about it that way. So I think the feelings wheel is helpful because it helps you identify these like specific emotion words that most of us don't ever think about. But if you were able to identify it, it could actually provide some reasoning and then a sense of control over why you're feeling the way that you do. And then you can apply a specific coping strategy for that specific emotion.
All right, maybe I misspoke. Anger, I think it's good to feel it if it's necessary, but if it changes your behavior based on the anger, then maybe you're going down the wrong road?
Yeah, I think that obviously anger needs to be expressed. You don't want to hold it back, right? You need to know what that's about. You need to validate the fact that you're angry. But at the same time, you don't have to act in a way that's going to make you feel bad about yourself later or regret something that you did or cause it to fester in your body and your mind. So I think it's okay to express it, especially, you know, letting people know, hey, that made me angry. That made me upset. But, you know, not lashing out just to hurt somebody just to do it, just because you're angry, or saying, I'm just going to shut everybody out who doesn't understand me. I mean, those things hurt yourself much more than they hurt the person that you're angry at. Doc, so I think maybe there's different ways to manage it.
I'm going to ask you this question. It came in via text. Obviously, there's a lot of sub stuff here that you don't know, but it says, what if your daughter-in-law had an affair? How do you get over it?
Oh, yeah, that's so hard. It's such a total assault on your child, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you necessarily have to get over it. Again, I think that it's, you know, your son is going to be the one who's going to decide if that relationship is still going to work for them, if they even want to work on it. You can be supportive of that decision without necessarily letting this person back into your inner circle, just like we were talking about. So it's like, you know, you can share your feelings with your son and be like, hey, I would not be okay with this. Obviously, it's your decision. You can still talk to him about it, and you should. But if he says he wants to be with her and he's going to try to make it work, that doesn't mean that she has to be in your inner circle, but you probably can be cordial when she's around. You don't have to be best friends with her again, and you don't ever have to trust her again. But if you guys have the kind of relationship where you can talk, then maybe you should talk to her and say, hey, that was a huge betrayal, not just for my son, but for me. And I want you to know that, you know. I think that it's always helpful to communicate when you think that that's an option.
So real quick, in the time we have left, a couple of minutes, some because people are texting about this, ways to let things go. Are there techniques where you can just let it go and get over it?
Yeah, you know, it can be really hard. But I think one thing to know is that oftentimes you're not going to have closure the way that you want. Right? Closure is a tough thing because sometimes you want something from that other person and they may never come around. So you have to be able to give closure to yourself. I think that that's the first most important thing. And so to have closure, there's been interesting things that I've done when I've been really upset or angry with somebody where I essentially, one, will try to see something positive about them and try to focus on that just for a week. It's so interesting how that changes the way you interact with that person. If you can just focus on one positive thing that they do in their day-to-day life, or just in general, appreciate about them in terms of their personality or how they tend to behave. Secondly, sometimes it's helpful to do some kind of ritual. Like I've, for example, you know, taken a hike into the mountains and then I'm like, I'm just going to, you know, essentially let the anger go right here at the top of the mountain. I'm just going to like do a very symbolic leaving of my anger at this place. And then I come down the mountain and I feel lighter, you know? So sometimes it's helpful to have something symbolic to mark your own closure if you can't get it from the other person.
Thank you, Dr. Judy. Valuable information as always. Very insightful. I appreciate your time. And tell Luca, have a good day.
I will. Thanks, Tommy. You too.
You too. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We'll talk to Noel Norman when we come back. He's got a big show for you. We'll explain it when we return on WWL.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.